Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today I have a special guest for a special cause for special people. Her name is Geraldine Baker. She is the director of One Spirit. We're going to talk about what One Spirit is. You can check her work out at nativeprogress.org. There is a live link right here. Click on through. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Maria.
How are you today?
I'm very, very good, thank you. It's a bit hot, a bit warm, but other than that, hey, life is good.
All right. Well, I've introduced you as the director of One Spirit, and even though One Spirit was honored as a 2016 top-rated nonprofit, a lot of people don't know and still have not heard of One Spirit. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. One Spirit, I founded the One Spirit organization in 2004 and 2005. And the reason was I had been working with a medicine man on the Mattaponi Reservation in Virginia and had been told about the problems and the poverty on Pine Ridge Reservation. And being a person from the Appalachian Mountains and with that kind of upbringing, I'm not a person who can let something go that needs to be rectified. And seeing a whole group of people in our country who were living in poverty and in need made me want to take action. What I found was a group of people that were absolutely, I learned more than I could possibly ever give. It's been a wonderful 10, 11 years of getting to know the Lakota people and what their culture is all about. And being able to go out and to be friends with them on their territory. Every time I go out, I learn something new. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's like, oh my goodness, I should have known that before.
Right.
But it's been a great journey.
Right. And, you know, I know that you're one of our elders.
Yes.
So, you know, you're really putting in the time. And, you know, as I was recently told, I'm no spring chicken. Where do you find the energy to do what you do? I know you just spent 10 days on the reservation.
I just always have had a lot of energy. And there's something inside of me. The adrenaline grows and, you know, you've got to move. Everybody's always, my friends are always saying to me, why don't you retire? And I'm saying, and do what?
Right, I feel the same way.
Or they're saying, well, you know, do something that's fun. I'm saying, but, you know, I am having fun. I'm having a world of fun. I'm enjoying every minute of it. I love getting to know the Lakota people. I have loved that. And I have loved the success that they have had of putting up a youth center, of putting up a safe house for the kids, of having a food program that really feeds their folks.
Right.
So
right.
What else do you want to do in your retirement? You
exactly. When my friends tell me, why don't you stop doing that show? It's making you crazy. I'm like, what else would I do? You know?
What are you going to do? Right? You going to watch TV or something? I don't know.
Well, you know, when you get to the point in your life where you're a matriarch, I think it's our duty to give back.
Well, I think it is too. And you know what, Maria, I have found people, the whole world, the world over is a bit of an exaggeration, but all over Europe and the United States, many people from Australia, some other various, you know, some people from various other parts of the world who really feel the same way. And they often come to me and say, I'm so grateful for the opportunity to find something that I can do that makes a difference to people in the world.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's all about. That's what people want to do. Given, you know, we're not a government agency and we're not a government, and if we can do something together that really makes a difference, then, you know, we don't have as many constraints as the government does, and we can just go do it.
Exactly. That's my new slogan now. See something, do something.
See something, do something.
Right. Right. Instead of the government, see something, say something, turn your neighbor in for a hangnail. I say, see
right.
something, do something. You know, I think...
Do something, do something.
Right.
I like that, Maria. I really like that. I have to think about using that.
Feel free to use it. I'm trying to make it go viral. See something, do something. When I see the rare
right.
good news story of somebody helping a neighbor, or a policeman actually doing something good, or somebody saving somebody from drowning, I always post that with the hashtag, see something, do
yeah.
something. I think people are still waiting for the government to take care of them. And I would assume that the plight of the Lakota tells you very clearly that the government isn't going to do anything. You know, I just tell people no lives matter, you know, and the only way it's going to matter is if we make it matter.
Yeah, and I think we have to go with all lives matter.
Exactly.
You know, all lives. And,
exactly.
Whether it's a black person or a policeman or an Indian child in a hockey game who has beer thrown at them, or, you know.
Exactly.
All lives matter.
Well, you know, I do notice on social media, you know, when the latest shootings or whatever, and the fact that they very rarely report on Native Americans that get shot by police
right.
or Latinos.
Right.
Latinos seem to have the same problem, if you want to call it a problem. But I do try to cover that as much as possible because, you know, like you said, all lives matter, and especially the lives of the original people. You know, I think that a lot of Americans don't have any real handle on the real history of how this country, well, I don't even want to call it founded, was stolen. And,
right.
you know, I mean, they came here, they found these super healthy, super wonderful, super spiritual, super sharing people and said, you know, let's kill them all and take the land. And I look
That's
at America
right.
now and I said, you know, a country founded by genocide could very easily end the same way.
Yep, so, you're right. And, you know, the other thing is that we have to look at, if we can get people to do that, is that the Indians, the Native Americans, have so much wisdom and so much to offer to the world.
Right.
This is true of every culture. They all have things to offer. You know, and we are a country that really was founded on that principle, which is the most amazing thing. I mean, besides the Native Americans. I don't mean, you know, when we came here, the idea supposedly that was put out was, you know, we are here for freedom, right?
Right.
And... but we didn't, and we obviously that didn't go for the Indians, but that was the whole idea, was that we're here as a place where all people can be free. I'd like to see it be that.
I would too. I keep telling people every law passed is another freedom lost. And when you look
yeah.
at, you know, I live in Arizona and we have a lot of reservations here. And when I drive mm-hmm. through the reservations, all I can see is desperation, it's poverty, it's, you know, starkness. Even though they're sitting on some of the most expensive land in Scottsdale, Arizona, you can see
right.
you can see the dichotomy, you know, the super rich, and then you see the reservations, which to me, you know, are almost like being in a prison without any bars around it.
You know, we do feel that way. And this is the other thing that the Native Americans have to teach us. And it's the balance, I think, Maria, between what we normally think of as a comfortable life, which demands a certain income, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what the Native Americans may see. I mean, certainly they don't need to have the hunger that's on their reservation, or the fact that they don't have heat in the wintertime, or those things. But besides that, they also have a way of really enjoying life. You know, when I go out there, in fact, one of the elders said to me, Jerry, why do you, when you come here, all you do is work, right? Why don't you sit down and let's talk about our toenails for a while? And I'm going, okay, well, yeah, I get that. Let's just sit down and just have fun, and we can joke and we can talk.
Right.
And I think that kind of attitude and what they bring, that and many, many other things, makes a huge difference and can make a huge difference to us.
Absolutely.
Because we are so work focused.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the way, unfortunately, this country was set up. I don't agree with it. I just said to one of my friends yesterday, wouldn't life be so much better if we didn't have to worry about money?
Right.
Speaking about money, you know, I surfed the heck out of your website yesterday.
And, oh, good.
And some of it, you know, might be startling for some of my listeners. So I want to just read a little paragraph I got off your site. We're talking about Pine Ridge, South Dakota. And you say, this is the plight of the Lakota people living on reservations there. Now, these are startling facts, folks. Life expectancy is 48 years old for men and 52 years old for women. Unemployment is around 87%. 90% of them live below the federal poverty level. Teenage suicide rate is 3.5 times higher than the national average. Infant mortality is 5 times higher than the national average. And diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and malnutrition epidemic. I mean, these are startling figures to believe that anybody in what is touted as the richest country in the world can be living like this in the United States.
Those are the figures that made me say, I can't tolerate this. This is something that needs to be done. Whatever I can do, I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you and I had a previous conversation, and I think everything you're doing is excellent, especially one of the projects you have to bring back the buffalo. Okay, now the buffalo, my understanding through my own readings of real history, the buffalo were like the department store, pharmaceutical store, and the food store for Native Americans.
And the clothing, yeah, there was a department.
And clothing,
store.
Okay, forgot that one off.
Everything.
Right, yeah. So when the invaders came to this country, you know, it makes sense that if they wanted to cripple the population here, they just decimated the buffalo population.
That's correct, yeah.
Now, you know, living in Arizona, even though I'm not Native American, I can tell you this, when I first moved out here from New York, one of the first things I did was I learned the mountain ranges here. I learned the shapes of the mountains. I learned the names of the mountains because that helps me get around.
Right.
And every time I see a familiar mountain or I say hello to it by name, maybe I'm a crazy person, I don't know, but I do. I talk to them. I think about the Native Americans who lived their whole lives in familiar territory, figuring out where they were by the mountains and the trees and the cactus and the plants, and how cruel it was to relocate those people, to actually was like taking them out of a safe home and putting them on another planet to disorient them.
Yes.
You know, so a lot of the
there was always the trail of tears and everything else that we all know about. You know, I hope we all know about.
Well, a lot of people don't, believe it or not. And as I told you earlier, I think it was like maybe in the mid-1980s, one of my girlfriends said to me, I really think that you should read this book. And she handed me a copy of Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee by Dee Brown. And I have to tell you, within the first 3 pages, I was crying like a baby. And I think I stayed crying through the whole book. I would think one of the other authors that have covered it really well was Howard Zinn and his History of America. But most people, this is not what we were taught in school. You know, we had the romanticized version of the Native Americans, the romanticized version of Thanksgiving. And I found that the more I learned and the longer I lived, the less I could celebrate any of those holidays without feeling like a hypocrite. And as an Italian, it hurt.
I think the natives call it, Maria, the natives call it Native American Day, and that's what they celebrate. They do not celebrate Thanksgiving.
Well, I haven't celebrated Thanksgiving in decades now because I don't want to be a part of it. And even as an Italian, where one of their greatest pride moments was that Columbus discovered America. But when I really learned about Columbus, even as an Italian, I says, I'm not celebrating that day either. And I think that if more Americans were better educated, which of course you have to be self-educated because schools aren't going to teach you that, things would change. People would care.
I think they do when they learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
How many people tell me almost every day, it usually begin with, well, where is Pine Ridge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And once they know it's in this part of the country, they say, are you doing it? Yeah, that's right. I mean, they really don't know about Pine Ridge. And when people find out what's there, they can hardly believe it. And then they go there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And come back and say, yeah, that's right. But, you know, and again, you know, you can go, it's always, you know, I always want to balance things because you can go to Pine Ridge and see the poverty. I mean, you can drive through and see the poverty. And you can see the people there trying to sell their beadwork and their art and that kind of thing. But unless you really go there and get to talk with and be with the people, you don't really know Pine Ridge Reservation. And even now, 10, 11 years later, do I know the culture completely? Heavens no, I know a lot about it. But you know, every time I go there, every time I talk to them, I learn something new. And it's a difficult thing to understand from your own, to allow your own cultural biases and ideas to be suspended while you listen to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to really hear what they have to say.
Well, I'm sure it's got to be fascinating, to say the least. You know, I think some of the ancient prophecies, you know, especially, I don't remember who, because I haven't read these books in so long, where they talked about a rainbow nation, rainbow people.
Right.
Do they still believe that that's doable? Is that achievable?
They do, you know, and again, I don't want to... what I'm going to suggest is that if you're interested and if your listeners are interested, is that we talk a little bit more about the Lakota culture and what it has to offer by bringing a Lakota person, a traditional Lakota person, onto your show and talking about what their culture is like and what, so that we can see what they have to offer to the world.
Yeah, that sounds great. That's something I would look forward to doing. I did look on your site and I saw the four principles or tenets of the Lakota.
Yeah.
Generosity, courage, respect, and wisdom.
And wisdom, that's correct.
And I think one of the important things is respect. I've just been having conversations with some of my friends about how rude everybody seems to be lately. No respect for their elders, you know, no respect for children. But as far as my understanding is, when they talk about respect, they do respect their elders for their wisdom, and they respect their young because they're the future. Okay, they're the future of the people. And this is something that is very quickly going away in I don't know how else to say it, white man's America.
Yeah. The children are sacred to the Lakota people. And certainly they respect and revere their elders.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that they have a whole elder program that is geared to do to nothing than to take care of the elders. The children are handled in a different way. They go with their caretakers, whether it be their parents or their grandparents, wherever they go. I mean, you know, they are not so much put into daycare or any of this thing. They are there. I've been in sweats and other ceremonies where the children are there. They're not left out. And I know that we take our own children to church or something like that. But these are not, they're not separated in any way. They're there as part of that environment.
Right.
So there's a huge respect.
Well, you know, it was also my understanding that they don't even have a word for children in their language. They call them little people, and they treat them like little people.
And everything like little people, right.
And yeah. I look at some of my friends who are still coddling their 30 and 40-year-old children. And, I'm like, at what point do these kids move out? You know what I mean? When are they going to be independent and on their own? Well, I know that they have a lot of problems there. I have watched their weather there, especially in the winter, which has to be a nightmare. Even if you had a house that had, you know, heat and a stove and this and that, I don't even know how anybody can live with, you know, 40 degrees, you know, 40 minus 40 degrees temperatures. And I don't think that people understand the kind of poverty that's there. And, you know, no, Americans, for some reason, have that, you know, I got mine, you get yours. You know, I go to work, you can get a job. I don't think people really understand the situation on the ground.
They don't. And you know, this more and more, you hear people, because that's the kind of thing that we say to people who have the opportunity and the ability to get a job or to get something. But if you have lived on the reservation, it's an intricate, complicated situation. Mm-hmm. Our government put them on the reservation with the assurance that they would be taken care of. In return for their land, they would be taken care of. And there are all kinds of broken all the time.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, I think your phone is getting a little wobbly. So try to just...
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay. Just try to stay near your phone.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, they... We took the land. We broke the treaties that we made with the Indians in order to have the land and to stop the fighting. And then we just ignored them, absolutely ignored them. Mm-hmm. So we now have them on a reservation, and we've reduced the amount of land they have continuously over the years. And down there, the nearest place where they could get a job is, you know, miles, hundreds of miles away. They don't have the income to go and do that. And if they do have the income to travel, if they manage to travel there or to go and live there, the bias and the prejudice is enormous toward the people there. And, you know, it's, you know, that was, I think, the epitome of that we saw last January, a year ago, when the children had earned through their education the right to go to a hockey game, and beer was thrown on them from above, from a box seat above them, right? That made the news, and maybe some of you saw that news.
Right.
But it's typical of the kind of bias that they receive when they go somewhere. You know, it's difficult to live on this reservation. The jobs are mostly tribal jobs. There are beginning to, but I want to say they are beginning to try now to create jobs, to create employment opportunities. Every little bit helps, and they try to do it in their own cultural way. Mm-hmm. Or they are doing it in their own cultural way, whether it be through tourism and trail rides through the Badlands, the most beautiful Badlands, the most beautiful place in the world, I think, sometimes. Except for Red Rock Canyon, perhaps, Maria. But by having trail rides, by having something that they can do within their own reservation for their own people, whether it be building. I mean, the saddest thing, I think, is because there are so many deaths on the reservation. That one of the things that has a good deal of employment is the casket industry. And so they build caskets, right? But
right.
Because the death rate is so high.
Well, that's terrible.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, I know that you said that, what are there, about 3,000 people there? How many people are in?
40,000.
40,000. And I know that you've been collecting donations and bringing in food every month. But even better is the fact that you've got them to try to bring back the buffalo and learn how to grow their own food.
It's really, really super. You know, sometimes I have to attribute my own denseness, you know, our own having to weed our way out of your own cultural thinking, right? Mm-hmm. And we do not always our way of giving is not good. You know, it's not that we want to go back to the days of the welfare queen and say we're going to cut them all off. You know, that's not the way to go either. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, we have an idea that the way of giving is to bring to the reservation, our clothing drive, our whatever we decide. And I have to say most often it's secondhand. Some of it is very good. A lot of it is not good. Mm-hmm. I have seen several times over semi-trucks that come up and dump clothing and broken toys and broken down couches on the reservation as a gift. And you watch this thing and go, what is this all about? You know?
Right.
People there, now you invite people to come out and they're picking over these clothing like, you know, I don't even want to say it. They're climbing through the clothing and this is old, used clothing, right? Mm-hmm. There's no distribution center. There's no place where you can take these because the reservation is very large, right? Wow. So there's no place you can take them and you know, in good condition and say, here, you know, take these and get them away. Now, some churches will do that, but as a central location, there's not. But we have a bad way of giving. And my thought has always been, if you can, and often we'll have groups of people who come and want to do something, and that's wonderful. It really is wonderful. But there's 80% unemployment on the reservation. You know, if you let that sink in for a minute, why do we have people coming to do something when we have 80% unemployment?
Right.
Does that make sense?
No. No,
it doesn't. These people are not handicapped. You know, they're not. They have skills. They have a lot of skills. They're very intelligent. So why are we doing it? I don't understand. So if we have the money to bring a group of people here to help, why don't we give that, have that way for that money to be handled so that they can be employed? Mm. They can earn money for their families. They can do something, right? And then when they do something or they cut down the wood for the winter or they build they repair houses or whatever it is that they do, then we can come and celebrate with them and we can really celebrate. Maybe that's the kind of Thanksgiving we should have, huh?
Absolutely. I'd be all for that one, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but please don't, you know, that it's degrading. It's really degrading.
Right.
To say, oh, I can do this and you can't, you know? Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Right. Right.
So we have done, bring back, let me just go to the food program. And I will be the first to admit that, you know, in my way of thinking, because I was in human services all my life, you know, the way to do was to hand out food, right? Which if somebody's hungry, that's what you do. And that's what we're still doing is making sure nobody goes hungry.
Right.
As much as we can. But you can't do this forever, and that's not fair to do it. So you find ways for them and help with them to find within their traditions ways of feeding their own people and sustaining their own and making contributions to the world. So they have buffalo. Let's bring back the buffalo.
Right.
Let's increase the herd. Let's, instead of, whenever they harvest a buffalo, they harvest it in a ceremonial way that's very beautiful. I'm not a person who can even eat meat most of the time, but, you know, they do harvest it in a very beautiful way, a very ceremonial way. The gates are open to the beyond, and they pray for the buffalo. They go through this. And then the buffalo is taken to Nebraska to be processed.
Huh.
Now, that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
Why are we not processing it on the reservation? These people know how to process buffalo. They need the facility to do that, right? So that the buffalo is processed, it's handed out. Now, not only that, but they have the only pure buffalo meat, pure buffalo that is not hybrid, has no cross-pollination, if you will, whatever you're going to call it. It's not beefalo. It's not any part beefalo. Yeah, it's buffalo, pure and simple. Mm-hmm. And it would be, they talk about having a way of marketing their buffalo meat, their brand of buffalo meat off the reservation. Well, you start where you are. First of all, you feed your people, right?
Right.
And you feed them with the kind of food that they have traditionally had. Back in the early years, they did not have these diseases. They were unknown among the Lakota people.
Right.
And it's only been, you know, in later years that all of this has happened. Certainly, I'm not going to pretend that I know how much of it is related to diet, but we do know that a lot of it is related to diet. Right.
Right.
And that the buffalo means more to them. It's certainly about the health of their diet, but it's about the emotional and spiritual health of their people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if we bring back the buffalo, we're doing a world of good for these folks, and they're doing a world of good for themselves.
Absolutely.
Right? They will have to have the buffalo, and that's what this is. So we have started the meat processing facility. We've started increasing the herd of buffalo. Just to tell you a really funny thing. So this, while I was on the reservation last week, the season for the rut season for the buffalo, right? So the buffalo, male buffaloes, started into a rut, and they broke down miles of fences, right? Mm-hmm. Not miles, but I'm sorry, maybe a mile of fences.
Right.
And so the Parks Department buffalo got mixed up with a herd that One Spirit has been increasing, right?
Uh-huh.
And they were all out trying to separate these buffalo out, and finally the park said, I tell you what, you just take whatever's left and go ahead and add it to the herd, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Bam Brewer, who manages the food program and who manages that buffalo herd, called me up and he said, guess what, we suddenly got about 10 more buffalo.
That's a good
thing. And we had before this started this morning.
Well.
So anyway.
That's a good thing.
Gradually.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
I mean, like you, you know, I'm no longer a meat eater, but when I first moved to Arizona, you know, seasonally, they would have buffalo available in supermarkets. And everything that I had read about buffalo meat made it pretty much the leanest, healthiest red meat you could possibly eat.
Right.
Especially compared to the filthy, you know, genetically altered cows that everybody's eating now. And
right.
I did cook it a few times, and it was quite delicious. It was very sweet and very, very delicious.
It is very delicious.
But,
yeah.
You know, I've been a vegetarian now for almost 20 years, so those days are pretty much behind me. Jerry, we need to go to a short break. When we get back, let's talk some more about some of the other good stuff going on the reservation. And stay with us.
Sounds
Jerry
good.
And I will be right back.
How does she do it? Reporting on worldwide news while retaining her sense of humor and passion for life? It's simple. Maria sees everything as part of our spiritual journey here and our unbreakable connection to all living things. From her book, Reinventing the Wheel, to her Reiki book and practice, and her excellent relationship-saving book, Relationships, Cutting to the Chase, one thing rings true, the philosophy of the medicine wheel. Why are we here? How do we stay in balance in a world gone mad? How do we live a happy and prosperous life regardless of the outside world of illusion? Once you gain that knowing, nothing in the outer world can rock your world. Check out Maria's books here on site at www.maria.net and pick out the book or books that resonate with you. Remember, Maria is available for one-on-one Reiki attunements and medicine wheel classes, no matter where you live. Get on your way towards becoming a multidimensional being walking between two worlds. Many have traveled to Arizona to study in person with Maria, and that option is available to you, too. Plus, you get to see one of the most beautiful states in the country. Check out Maria's books, www.maria.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to myself and Jerry Baker. She's with One Spirit. Check out their website, nativeprogress.org. There's a live link here. There's a million ways you can help these people, and don't help them out of guilt or any other reason except they need our help, and all lives matter, especially the lives of the original people. You can donate money, you can donate clothes, you can do so many things. There's so many wonderful things on the site that they're putting together for these people. And I'll bet you'll sleep a whole lot better at night after you do so. Jerry, well, you and I have talked about, you know, bringing back the buffalo, which I think is great. And right. I get very upset when I see the government wanting to destroy more of the herd at Yellowstone.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember, I'm like, okay, why don't they just give those buffalo to the reservations across the country instead of killing them?
And absolutely.
I remember driving through Yellowstone, and I was a little disappointed because I hadn't seen any buffalo. And then after I got about, I don't know, halfway through the park, my entire car was surrounded by buffalo. And it was one of the most thrilling moments of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I was just blown away by their beauty. You know, one of them pretty much put his face right on my car window, right up against my face. And I looked into his eyes and like I could see forever. For me, it was such a big thrill that I actually started crying.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we need to remember we're all connected to nature, to every living thing. And I think that a lot of Americans in their haste and running between three jobs and TV and all this crap have kind of forgotten that we're connected to nature. And that might be part of why we're all so angry and neurotic.
Yeah. Could well be. It's a beautiful thing when you really are... And I find this more on the reservation, and I think all of us find it at different times and have a yearning for it. That's why we go to the parks. That's why we go to as far as we can away from civilization in order to really enjoy the world as it is.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we talked a little bit about what people can do. And, I have had, over the 11 years that I have been working with the Lakota, many, many people come up and call me and say, thanks for giving us a way to really do something that's important in this world and that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually we're doing that. We have this End Hunger campaign going on. You know, everybody says, oh, well, that's a big job. Well, yeah, but if you don't start it, it doesn't get done, does it?
Right.
So, yeah, so we think part of the thing is to bring back the buffalo to set up the meat processing facility. And certainly we've started. We've got about $30,000, I think now $40,000 invested in building the meat processing facility and increasing the buffalo herd. And we have probably another 50,000 to go, right, to get this thing really where it should be, so that buffalo meat goes through the food program, but is what is being given to the Lakota people. That is probably our main thing now, is get this up as part of the food program. Let's get this thing going, and let's start with processing buffalo meat on the reservation, giving employment to people and giving them the food that they need in order to be healthy. Right. The other thing that the Lakota people want to do as part of the food program is to have food centers. And this will be different than food pantries as we know them. Food centers will certainly have food there for people. It'll be somewhat similar to food co-ops, where people come in and work or be part of the food center in order to get food for themselves. But it will also have the traditional foods and be something like the markets, the food markets that you may see, or the community markets that you may see now in the U.S. and certainly all over Europe, where you may say it's market day and people all go to the market, right?
Right.
And they can be clothes there or anything, any kind of things that, you know, it's like our retail centers now, you know,
right.
The malls that we go to. I mean, this way, it's all the people are out. It's quite a big to do. It's market day. We also have someone who's coming out to do organic gardening with the people there on several acres of land. And she has had a business, organic gardening business, that's been successful, which she's sold, and she's now going to help establish this on the reservation. So, you know, we have the ability to end hunger on the reservation and end it in a healthy way.
Right.
Not just by giving them sugar-loaded, you know, high-carbohydrate foods, but by giving them, you know, I want to just briefly, Maria, tell people what it's like on the reservation and why this is so important.
Sure.
It was really hit me this time when I was there because I went to the Heritage Center and I saw their recorded tour of the photos that were on the wall. And a long time ago when, you know, when the people were first ushered onto reservations and being rounded up, they were giving out food at a certain time and there would be lines of food. And they had pictures of these lines of food, lines of people waiting for food to be handed out. And I thought, you know what? That never stopped. Because today, we get our folks on the reservation get government commodities or EBT, what used to be food stamps, now EBT.
All right.
And these in this society does not last. So it doesn't last anywhere, but it surely doesn't last here. This is a sharing society.
Right.
They're not going to see their neighbor or their brother or sister or their cousin go hungry if they don't have food. They're going to share what they have until it runs out.
Right.
Then it's gone. Right. So then until there's another allotment, they have no food or they have minimal food. Come the 10th of the month, every month, at midnight or 12:01 a.m. on the 10th of the month, if you go on the reservation, you'll see a long line of people at any place that sells food. They're all waiting for the doors to open for their EBT cards to be refurbished and replenished.
Right.
And they can go in that store and buy food. And the stores open. This is the only time they do. They open at 12:01 a.m. And the people go in to get food. And the next day, the kids don't go to school. Nothing is done because now they're going to eat. They have food. And the kids have been out too late. They can't get to school. But they have food and they're going to eat, right? So, in fact, the Indians call EBT. They have another name for it. It's called Eat Big Time.
Aww.
And that's what they call it. But in my way of thinking, this is not necessary. This is not, in this country, this is not necessary. Last month, when we had food distribution day on the reservation, so many people showed up that we had to close the doors of the food distribution because we ran out of food and we left a lot of people outside with no food. That can't be. That
right.
just very well freaking cannot be. Now, there must be food for people to eat. And children don't develop the way they should if they don't have food. Elders can't fight off disease if they don't have food and the right kinds of food.
Right. So, and then, of course, let's not forget if people are hungry and it's freezing cold like it gets there, they can't keep their bodies warm because they have no fuel on the inside.
That's right.
But I agree with you. The best way is to make them self-sufficient, to, you know, to sustainability, to be able to process and grow their own food. To get back to being, listen, in my understanding, the Lakota were one of the more peaceful, proud tribes. So some of what I read on your site said a lot of people even keep the language going, where a lot of other tribes have not.
Absolutely.
Right. But a lot of other tribes have not, you know, and I hear that here, you know, a lot of the elders complain that their young people won't learn the language, they won't learn the sacred ways, they move away from home as soon as they can. So here you have this proud, beautiful people, and I think what you're doing to help them and One Spirit is phenomenal to teach, you know, to be able to fight for them, to be able to take care of themselves, because nobody really wants somebody else taking care of them.
No, they don't. They really don't.
You know, I hear this argument against, you know, people on welfare or people on food stamps and whatnot. And people that have stuff act like those people are pulling some kind of a grift on them. But you know
right.
what? I know plenty of those people and they're working Americans. And it's very sad that they need to depend on that. So I have never met anybody that's super happy because they're receiving a dole from the government.
No, not at all. In fact, it's so degrading. It is so degrading.
I would think so, you know, and then I noticed, you know, and when you talked about how they like to share and share the material things, you know, it brought back the lessons I learned of the giveaway blanket,
right.
You know, where people would, you know, in a community, you know, have a big blanket on the ground. Everybody meets maybe once a week, puts down whatever they had extra for anybody that needed it. I mean, to me, that's true charity and true, you know, caring for your fellow man, no matter what color they are.
That's right. That's exactly right.
You know, thus we can go back to what I said, see something, do something. You know, I was out with one of my friends and we saw, you know, a homeless person. And she said to me, you know, I give to a homeless person, but I won't give them cash, she said. And I looked at her and I said, why not? And she said, well, because they might buy alcohol. I said, well, then you're not really giving. Because if you're really giving, it doesn't matter what the person does with what you give to them.
Well, it's true. It's always that. You always have that way. You know, we do say to people who sponsor families or sponsor children on the reservation, we do suggest that they not send cash. And the reason being that you know, there's so much need there for the kids, for food and for clothing, and there's so many ways that you can do that without just popping that cash in their hand. And, you know, any cash that comes through to us, you know, we buy food with. If there's urgent needs, we pay for it. And, yeah, you're right, Maria. To some extent, it's much more respectful to put money in the hands of the person and say, here, go take care of your needs. But on the other hand, we also try to just make sure that the money goes absolutely where it needs to go.
Right.
And that we can assure people who make donations that this money has gone for this purpose.
Exactly.
We know it has.
Exactly. Yeah. Not like most of the charities in this country that have been exposed where, you know, maybe 2% of the money collected goes to the charity. Most of it goes to CEOs and big time pay. But I don't think that One Spirit would have won an award for the best, you know, the best charity out there, the best top-rated nonprofit, unless you were actually doing the right thing with whether people are donating money, food, clothes, adopting a family. I mean, there's so many things that can be done. Just on your website,
sure.
I was sifting through it, and I was looking at the big list of, you know, some of the families, what they need, you know, and a lot of them was something simple like sneakers. Okay.
Right.
And things that we take for granted, you know, when we're doing okay, that there are people that don't have clothes on their backs. And like a lot of other Americans, a lot of grandparents raising their grandchildren, when their kids get to them with nothing but the clothes on their backs.
You know, one of the most poignant things that I saw, that I've seen out there, there's a coach on the reservation named Dale Pine. Dale is the coach of the high school cross-country team and all the running programs, right? He was a coach for the marathon runners that we sent to New York for the New York City Marathon several years. But I have seen Dale does a lot of things. He opens his home to kids who need a place to stay. He will take them home with him with their parents' knowledge. You know, he feeds them when they need to be fed. He picks them up and takes them for doctor's appointments or to school or whatever needs to be done. But I have seen him when the kids showed up, most of the kids would come to run and they will have flip-flops on or they'll have something else. I've seen Dale take the shoes off his feet and hand them to a kid and say, here, you can't run in those flip-flops. Take these shoes and go run. And he stood there barefoot. While the kids, but it's this kind of wonderful, wonderful giving on the reservation that makes it very special.
Exactly. I mean, if we did that throughout the country, throughout the world, we wouldn't have any need for government. But somewhere along the line, people got convinced that the government's going to take care of us. Well, I would say the Native Americans are a perfect example of how the government would take care of all of us.
Yeah, that's right.
They'll take care of us, okay. That's what I always say. Ask a Native American how they took care of them.
Yeah, it's true. And yet, there are some things that the government needs to take care of, but there are other things that we need to be part of that government and say, look, this is what can be done, and exercise whatever control we can exercise too. But we cannot. If our government is not going to do it, then we need to step up. We can't just say, well, the government's going to do it.
Right.
Government can't do everything.
Exactly. And, back in the day, even when I was a young girl, I mean, I didn't grow up on a reservation, but, I grew up in an Italian slum in Brooklyn. But I can tell you this.
Okay.
Everybody shared everything they had. We took care of each other's kids. We knew, who was sick. Everybody visited, brought food, whatever was happening.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had that sense of community that natives have had, since the beginning of time, I would assume.
Yeah. I want to go back to one thing you said, Maria, which was really pointing out. This is something I just, went through on the reservation with an elder there.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, if you can't give something, when you give it with no expectations.
Right.
You just give, right? And so we had finished up the building the youth center, and in my thinking, I'm thinking, well, let's support this youth center. Let's send stuff out. Let's do, pool tables or whatever they need, reading centers or televisions or movies or whatever,
Right.
That the kids need out there, books, et cetera. And the elder said to me, Jerry, you give a center and you built a center. Now give it to the community and let them do with it. And I'm going, oh. Okay. I think you're right. We'll do that. We'll just give this to the community and we'll back off. Here's your building. Here's a place to take care of your children. You can put the programs in. You can teach them their culture. You can teach them. You can tutor them and mentor them. And you can teach them have music, let them have music and arts, whatever you want. But here's your building.
Right.
Because there's no place for the youth out there. That building was really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
But after we did that, we needed to back off and let them make it the way they wanted to be for their culture.
Exactly. Exactly. Jerry, I wanted to ask you, what tribe are you affiliated with?
The Appalachian tribe of Kentucky. No tribe.
No tribe.
I'm Irish, Scotch-Irish, Appalachian, born in Harlan County, Kentucky.
Oh, I saw a little video of you.
Scotch-Irish parents, and with my father was a gentleman who walked the picket lines for the Union in the coal mines when it was worth his life to walk the lines.
Right.
But he instilled in us the fact that you don't let injustice go, that you do something about it. That's where I'm from.
Absolutely. Well, I saw a video of you, and I got to tell you, you look as Native American as anybody could possibly look. So maybe,
thank you very much. That's quite an honor.
Maybe it wore off on you. Maybe it was a reward for all your work.
That's right. Yeah.
Jerry, I am so glad that you joined me today. And we brought
Thank
this
you very
issue
much for
out.
Having me.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And I know that this is happening on a lot of reservations in the United States.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are some, here in Arizona where they have casinos where a lot of the reservations are doing very well. And then there's, the total opposite. It just looks like a bomb went off and it's heartbreaking just to even drive through it. So I can't even imagine a life like that. And I want to thank you so much for doing what you do. And I'm sure that the Great Spirit smiles upon you, sister.
Thank you very much, Maria. I appreciate that so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. You take good care. It's been my pleasure.
Mine too. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Jerry Baker, Geraldine Baker. She's the director of One Spirit. The website's got tons of stuff on it. Please check it out. Because even all these years later, they're still the ignored people in this country in so many ways. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. And I will see you guys on Thursday.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom, only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.